Well, this week marks 100 years since Fianna Fáil was founded by Éima de Valera in May 1926. It's a century in which the party helped to shape modern Ireland and really dominated Irish politics. But at 100 years old, is Fianna Fáil now a remarkable survivor story or a warning about how Irish politics struggles to change? This is News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And today we're going to look back at the moments, the movements and the personalities that defined Fianna Fáil and look ahead to where the party goes next.
We'll work to build the country they'll be living in. We'll fight to make it right, no thought of giving.
We have here a wonderful little country. There is probably no part of the earth better fitted to live in. But our area is small and our population is small. And if we wish to compete with these larger and wealthier countries, we must make up our minds that we will have to work hard.
It is with deep sadness that you and I, Irishmen and women of goodwill, have learned of the tragic events which have been taking place in Derry and elsewhere in the north in recent days.
Good evening. I wish to talk to you this evening about the state of the nation's affairs. And the picture I have to paint is not, unfortunately, a very cheerful one. The figures which are just now becoming available to us show one thing very clearly. As a community, we are living way beyond our means.
My ultimate political aspiration remains the coming together of all the people of Ireland, achieved peacefully and by consent. But I look forward equally to a new era of friendship and reconciliation between unionists and nationalists, in which each tradition can learn truly the value of the other.
We're joined now by Irish Examiner special correspondent Mick Clifford and Fianna Fáil TD for Cork East, James O'Connor. You're both very welcome to News Talk Daily. So, Mick, are you going to give us a belt of happy birthday?
Happy birthday.
For Fianna Fáil, 100 years.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Do you know what we're talking about today,
happy
Mick?
Happy birthday to Fianna Fáil, Ciara. Very, very appropriate, all right. It's this month, 100 years ago, that Éima de Valera, with the help of his good friend and confederate, you could say, Sean Lemass, basically got Fianna Fáil off the ground with a meeting following their split from Sinn Féin over the issue of whether or not to stay out of the newly formed Dáil. And Mr. de Valera obviously felt it was in their best interest to enter it. The majority in Sinn Féin disagreed. They still wanted a scenario whereby they held fast to the idea that once there was an oath of allegiance, they wouldn't be joining any parliament. As a result, Dev and those around him walked out of Sinn Féin, and that was in March 26, at a meeting in Rathmines. And within 2 months, they had put together a new party, Fianna Fáil, the Soldiers of Destiny.
So that was the moment, that was the catalyst, I suppose, to the creation of this party. But who were they trying to appeal to? Who were the original Fianna Fáil voters in Ireland?
I suppose what they said, they suggested they were the men of no property. You might note in the post-conflict era, the early 20s, Irish women, who had been prominent in the 1916 proclamation, they appeared to disappear from public discourse in any generalised sense. So men were used rather than Irish men and Irish women. But they were appealing, I suppose, to the small farmer, to the urban working class, to the greatest extent. And also then they had that nationalist fervour that they claimed that their main guiding principle was the reunification of the whole island, although it could very well be argued that it did next to nothing to advance that over the following 40, 50 years until the North exploded. But so they would have attracted those kind of people. They would have attracted the urban working class, the small farmers, and as well, notwithstanding divided opinion over Éima de Valera because of his role in the Civil War and leading up to the Civil War, he still was a huge figure for a lot of people. He was the only surviving commandant in politics from the 1916 Rising. So there was a huge attraction to him. And I suppose in the broadest sense, you could say they were a populist party. Now, that kind of populism and the sort of what you might call right-wing populism we have today are pretty different beasts, but they were populist to the extent that they were not wedded to a specific political philosophy, but they had, a bit like the late, late show of all, something for everybody in the audience kind of thing. And as I say, one of the huge selling points they had was the personage of Eamon de Valera himself.
And remind some of our younger listeners here on News Talk Daily, Mick, about how dominant they were in politics for the first probably 70, 80 years of their existence.
Yeah, well, they formed 26. The following year, 27, they won 40-odd seats, but they had a problem in that they weren't going to sign the Oath of Allegiance. They marched up to the Dáil and they marched down again. Then there was a shocking incident that effectively, you could say, got Dev off the hook, and that was the murder of Kevin O'Higgins, who was the Minister for Justice. He was a figure who elicited a lot of divided opinion, particularly again, because his own role during the Civil War, he was murdered on his way to Mass. Following that, there was something of a crackdown, and as part of that, the existing Cumann na Gael government said that anybody running for Parliament thereafter for the Dáil had to pledge that they would sign the Oath of Allegiance. So that's what happened when Fianna Fáil got in an election a few months after that. Dev reluctantly and with some drama did sign the oath, and so they were in the Dáil. Then 1932, they finally got into power as a minority government, and within a number of months Dev called another general election where they got into power on their own. And from that point, right up until the early 1980s, until 1981, Fianna Fáil dominated politics. There was two lacunas when they were out of government. But apart from that, they were in government all that time. They were in government on their own. And even then, throughout the 1980s into the 90s, they were constantly in government as part of coalitions right up to 2011, when there was this catastrophic electoral disaster following on from the economic collapse for which Fianna Fáil were blamed. Although some people would argue that some of the reason of the collapse was because of the measures they brought in after the fall. But one way or the other, I think it's very difficult to escape the reality that they were primarily responsible in a political sense for that disaster. And that changed everything completely for them. They were reduced from about 77 to 27 seats, but thereafter they were no longer what you might call far and away the biggest party in the state. Since then, they've recovered that title in a very different political firmament, in that they're what you might say slightly the biggest of three medium-sized parties now, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, but they're very much a very different political beast to that which dominated the state for the first 60, 70 years of its existence.
You talk about Eamon de Valera there, you're talking about Sean Lamass, I'm thinking about Charlie Haughey, I'm thinking about Bertie Ahern, and I'm thinking of these big political characters who really moulded the party and defined the party throughout the eras. Do you think Fianna Fáil has changed Ireland more, or has Ireland changed Fianna Fáil?
Well, that's a very good question, Ciara, because Fianna Fáil themselves, particularly under Dev, considered the party to be the spirit of the nation. Now, you can take what you want from that and whose spirit it is and whose nation and what have you. But, you know, there are ways that it tracked the state. Like, for instance, Lamass in 1926, a figure who I think a lot of people would maintain was the best Taoiseach we ever had, and perhaps should have been Taoiseach 10 years before he was, because they've hung on too long. But in 1926, when they were formed, he had a 9-month-old daughter, Maureen, and she went on to marry Charlie Haughey as an adult. And Haughey changed the nature of Fianna Fáil, certainly in one way, in that he was one of the so-called men in the mohair suits in the 60s. But there's no doubt that the corruption he was involved in set a kind of a precedent and an atmosphere there that stained the party at a time when the country was coming out of its status as very underdeveloped into take a place at the table of the kind of First Nations of the world sort of thing in the 80s, going into the 90s. Now, he also did an awful lot of good things politically, and he was a man of serious, serious ability. But the whole corruption that surrounded him and his relationship with money, that certainly left a big stain on Fianna Fáil. And then you had scenarios whereby a number of his successors, Albert Reynolds, there was nothing to do with him about money, but he left in controversial circumstances over the Beef Tribunal report. Then you had Bertie Ahern, who left in controversial circumstances over the planning tribunal. And then you had Brian Cowan, who left in controversial circumstances following the economic collapse and the fallout from that. So there was something of a traumatic trajectory for the party under those leaders, after you initially had Dev and then the more avuncular Jack Lynch, who I don't know, he didn't leave in controversial circumstances, but I don't know how much of a success he was considered, particularly internally, and all the way up to Micheál Martin. And fairness to Micheál Martin, he is now the second longest serving leader of the party. And I think history will be pretty kind to him from the point of view of where he brought the party from 2011 to where it is today, notwithstanding that there's a lot of internal murmurings about him. But one thing he would seem to have done is to appeal to an electorate beyond the confines of the party, and therefore help Fianna Fáil back to its current reduced status as the just about the most popular party in the state currently, anyway. And obviously, from opinion polls, I would suggest that's gone again. But sure, we don't know what happens between elections.
No, and in fairness to Fianna Fáil, how they perform in opinion polls and how they perform in elections, there tends to not be a correlation between those two things. I've seen that time and time again. I want to bring in James O'Connor here, because you're one of the younger TDs in the party elected in 2020, and you hear Mick describe Fianna Fáil back, you know, when they started as the party of the Late Late Show, one for everybody in the audience. You know, they had a way of appealing to all sorts of classes of people within Ireland. Who do they appeal to now?
It's a good question. And there's a very clear line now between people who I would view as owning their home and their property or having a mortgage, and an entire generation of people, which I'm a part of, that don't own a home, you know, that are either renting or living at home with the parents. And, you know, their political leanings in respect of that are very different. For Fianna Fáil, where I want the party to be is to be the party that can get those young people back in sight, back to what we would have been in the 2000s, back to what, you know, Mick was speaking of there in the Charlie Haughey era, etc., where we were the dominant force in government. And the closest thing we have got to that since the electoral result in 2007 was just the last general election just gone by. And to be fair, we have the majority number of members of cabinet in this current government in comparison to our coalition colleagues in Fine Gael. And it's been a long journey. And I feel, as a TD at the age of 28, you know, we in the political world are not in tune with the patterns of thinking with younger people in general on the government side. Polling is showing that. It does concern me. You know, I think often there is characterizations in the media, and I get a little bit tiresome when I kind of hear of rumblings or, you know, people picking at Micheál, etc. You know, people are actually putting their hand up in Fianna Fáil and other government TDs and other parties that they want to see the government performing better. I don't think that's an unreasonable ask. And I don't think it's always fair, perhaps, to, you know, hyper-focus on the fact that, you know, that we're just being critical for the sake of it, because we're not. And I actually have a very good relationship with the Taoiseach. People might be surprised to hear that, because I'm a known critic. I spoke to him on the phone the other day, but it's all policy focused in our conversations. And I think what
you don't get into the personal, do you not?
No, we don't. And I think what makes Micheál Martin the leader that he is, and somebody that I think the public, you know, take away what happened last month, because it was very damaging for the government. Let's face the facts. You know, he is genuinely a very compassionate individual who has the interests of the country at heart.
Do you see him as the saviour of Fianna Fáil?
He's definitely 100% was, you know, and the problem for Fianna Fáil coming into that, disastrous general election in 2011. And then prior to that, the 2009 local elections, when the party took its first electoral kicking, and then the annihilation in 2011, where we were back to 20 seats. And then subsequently, Lord Mercy and poor Brian Lenehan, we lost that seat too. So we were down to 19 at one point. That was a dark period. And speaking to my colleagues that were there in that Dáil, they speak, quite a lot about that time of basically having the front bench room as being used for the parliamentary party meeting because we'd so few TDs. So that was the type of scenario the party was in. It was broke after coming through that period as well. And Micheál Martin set about rebuilding an organisation, and the fruit of that started to come true in the 2014 local elections. That was my first election where I was involved in canvassing. So that 2014 election for Fianna Fáil was one of rebuilding. It worked. We had a very good election in 2016, and the party got back to 44 TDs in the Dáil at that point. I would not have been elected to Dáil Éireann if Micheál Martin went in 2019 and withdrew from that confidence to supply arrangement, which was being demanded by that parliamentary party, I think, at the time. I wasn't in the room, but that's the general consensus. But I would say if he had gone in 2019, Micheál Martin would have been a Taoiseach with probably 7 or 8 Fianna Fáil cabinet ministers, in my opinion. And he finally got to the Taoiseach's office, but I don't think he got his just reward for the work of that rebuilding. And I think I'm being pretty balanced, and Mick may have some views on that, but it's just that's my perspective on it.
Mick, I just noticed there James is talking about, you know, going back to being the dominant party they were, going back to that time in the 80s where they, you know, I think understood the people is what you were saying, and were in tune with younger people and their needs and their demands. Is that realistic for any party in Ireland now to be that dominant force again?
No, unless, of course, Ciara, you saw something like a merger between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and I think separately did say it's not in their interest. I'm sure they'd be able to get over their differences in the modern world. But I mean, you know, I certainly agree with James in terms of the big divide in society at the moment is between the old and the more secure in terms of home ownership and that, and the young, and the dreadful situation with attempting to get a place to live and the price that's paid for it. But I don't see Fianna Fáil having a big impact on that any more than I would Fine Gael or Sinn Féin, for instance, or most of the parties. I mean, you know, there's a reality there, and that's that older people vote more. So whatever is going to be done is going to be done on the basis that people of my age and what have you are not discommoded in order to have a more equal society. And what James is talking about there is all perfectly valid, but largely it would seem to me as it's all about organisation and hard work and fair play for all of that. But I don't see any political compass that suggests Fianna Fáil will be any way different. In fact, the future I would see for them is most likely as a kind of a party that oscillates between, for example, Fine Gael on one side and perhaps Sinn Féin and maybe a few other entities on the other, in terms of being a coalition partner because of its tradition for being that kind of centre populist entity. It could go between one and the other. But in terms of any specific political focus that would ensure it becomes anywhere near a mass movement or any chance of reverting to the kind of status it had going back 13, 40 years, I don't see any future for that at all, to be honest with you.
James, do you think there's anybody in the party right now who could genuinely become a transformational leader for Fianna Fáil that could bring that mass movement that Mick said is going to be so hard for any party to achieve?
I think what Mick said there in respect that he doesn't see it, I think it can be done. For Fianna Fáil, I genuinely see green shoots coming through the new members of the parliamentary party. There's extraordinary work. Like Albert Dolan has made an enormous impact. You know, the work he's doing in public procurement. It's actually inspiring to see somebody come in as a first-time TD and make such an impact so quickly. And you know, there are other people. And you know, Jim O'Callaghan took a knock last month. There's no two bones about it. But for me, he is such an effective minister, particularly responding to the issues in migration, around the reforms of the asylum process in Ireland, around the reforms that are happening where, you know, we are responding to the public demand that Ireland needs to reduce, unfortunately, the level of support we're able to provide for international protection and for, you know, people fleeing conflict. And I think...
So he's the person you'd have confidence in?
Jim O'Callaghan, I worked with for 2 years. I know him better than probably anyone else in our parliamentary party. I worked in his office for 2 years before I was elected. And he's one of the most impressive people I've ever met. And I think he learned a valuable lesson in, you know, how the public can react when they don't feel that a decision has been taken in the correct and proper manner. And that's an important lesson to learn. He had his fingers burnt. But I do feel there is a leader in the future of the party in Jim. I also look at Dara Kaleri. I look at Dara O'Brien, James Lawless as well as people.
Oh, you've no shortage of leaders. But, why aren't any of them moving? But, and no, they're all so ready to go.
But let's be fair. Like, I mean, they're all doing good work in their departments. Mm. They're getting on very well with the parliamentary party.
Where do you think Jim would position the party? What would his sell be?
I think the grassroots of the party for Fianna Fáil socially would probably slightly right of centre. But on an economic perspective, they would be slightly left of centre. And this is the whole conundrum of Irish politics about what's the difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, etc. And there is a difference, and it's hard to explain it at times, but there really is a difference in approach. And he gets labelled with the South Dublin barrister and all this nonsense. You know, he's the son of a primary school principal teacher from the countryside. He's also the son of a member of An Garda Síochána, you know. And he comes from a very grounded background. And he's gone on to do really wonderful things with his life and then obviously became, I think, which was his ultimate goal. You know, he's not a selfish individual. You know, he stood back that time he was offered the Minister of State and waited. And he was actually offered the Department of Justice and to be Minister of Justice, which I think was always his career ambition. But that for me, I think, is an honest answer to the question.
Okay, what do you think, Mick? I mean, where do you see this party going over the next decade? Who will be leading it? And what will their niche be?
I don't see any big change irrespective of who is leading it, Ciara, in terms of where it would be positioned in the political spectrum or what exactly the party might represent or how different that would be, for example, in one sense from Sinn Féin, who arguably are still on a journey and how they evolve, are in another from Fine Gael. Now, I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. I'm just saying one of their problems will be to distinguish themselves from those two other entities in the current firmament. And I suppose one perhaps way they can distinguish themselves is as being, to use the phrase, the piggy in the middle. I mean, they're perfectly capable. I know Micheál Martin stated he would, but I think it's fair to say it. He obviously can't say it himself, but he's relatively close to the end of his tenure, one way or the other. But what follows with him, you know, depending on how the chips fall, depending on small little nuances in policy, whether they can go in, for example, if required, with Sinn Féin after one election or Fine Gael after another. And to some extent, that's a kind of a role that in the old days Labour would have played. They went in with Fine Gael on a few occasions, and in the early 90s, they went in with Fianna Fáil. And I think a lot of people would say that it was an awful shame how that union ended, because they would have been pretty well suited at the time to each other. But so I don't see any big change. I don't see any big shift. Of course, all of this is predicated on the idea that we don't have another massive upheaval as we did, like the economic collapse, because should that happen, all bets are off. And the other one factor I play into that is whether or not there is a further rise in what you might call the populist right. We have a small element to that in the Dáil and a lot of it outside the Dáil online, and that how representative that is, I don't know. But should that, what the likes of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and Sinn Féin have shown in recent years is that when you have any movement in that direction, they're perfectly capable of adapting themselves to try and head it off to some extent. That could be a dangerous scenario, but in broad terms, I don't see Fianna Fáil breaking any new ground to that extent coming into the future, but good luck to them if they do.
James, who do you think Fianna Fáil should fear most over the next decade? Sinn Féin, those independents that Mick talks about, or themselves?
I think the failure to deliver for that group in society, that generation I speak of, that are being locked out of the possibilities of home ownership, if that model of that social contract is not brought back into line with what the expectations of the Irish public is, there will be political consequences to that. And where I see that happening is that we have been lucky that there's been no organised far-right movement in Ireland that has found a Farage-style voice to impact politics here. And a couple of key moments for me in the last 6 months politically, that Independent Ireland push on the Mercosur issue, and they had quite a big rally down in Athlone. And that to me was kind of the start of the whole run into the fuel protests, where you'd seen a kind of a much more consolidated, well-organised campaign, kind of more militant really on the issues facing rural Ireland. And I think in rural constituencies for Fianna Fáil, that presents a risk. You look at the patterns and growth of the support in A&2 and Independent Ireland, and you would probably make the assumption that they would be quite transfer friendly to one another. And on those mathematics at the moment, they're not far off of the seat in each constituency. And in urban Ireland, I see the Social Democrats actually eating into Sinn Féin support. And I think voters that want to not vote for government, if they feel government has not performed by the time the upcoming election cycle happens, we'll be looking in that direction. But that is all in the context and the precondition now that government doesn't deliver. We're a year and a half in, we've 3.5 years to go, and I just want to be super clear about that, because it's a pokey question. You have to be careful how you respond to these things, yeah.
All right, Deputy James O'Connor and Mick Clifford, thanks so much for coming in and speaking to us today on News Talk Daily. That's Fianna Fáil from the last 100 years and looking ahead to what could happen over the next decade, indeed over the next century. Do email me your thoughts on anything we discuss here on News Talk Daily. I do love to hear from listeners. News Talk Daily at newstalk.com, or follow me on Instagram. My handle is at @officialkiraD, and send me a message there. I'd be delighted to hear from you. Until tomorrow morning, take care. Bye-bye.